Roger McGuinn, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, the man who is credited by many people with fusing folk music with rock music, the man who turned the Rickenbacker 12-string guitar into a sound that we all became so familiar with, is here in the studio with me today. Hello, Roger. That is that great jingle-jangle sound of the Rickenbacker guitar, and he's got it with him here in the studio today. And it's been a couple of years since we talked, and it's great to have you back.
It's great to be back.
You're also appearing with the Rock Bottom Remainders this week.
Yeah, I've been doing that for about 4 years, and I love it. They're so much fun to tour with.
Yeah.
They're great guys, and they're so fun. You know, funny.
And I think they bring you on because they got to have at least one guy who knows what the notes are.
They call me a ringer. But actually, they're pretty good. That's a secret. They don't like me to tell that, but...
Well, I'll ask them later and see what they say in response to you. Let's talk about a couple of things related to music, one of which we were talking about just before we went on here, and that is a project of yours, and you've got several of them going on. In addition to this week here in St. Louis, you've got a website called The Folk Den,
yep.
And you've been recording on there for, I think it's almost 10 years.
It's about to be 10 years in, actually it's 9 years. It'd be 10 years in November. No, it's going to be 10 years next month.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you've been recording great old folk songs, the kind of folk music that when I was a kid and learning to play guitar, I learned things from Pete Seeger and the Weavers.
Right.
And some of these old, I don't mean
Odetta
old.
And Judy Collins and Tommy Makem and the Clancy Brothers. And
some of these old great things. And I hear that last night you got Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson together and performed one of these old songs.
I did, because I'm on the road and I usually do them at home, but I can't do it at home. So we set up in Ridley's living room, and Dave and Ridley and Greg and I all just kind of sang around the computer.
Kevin, cue up the Sloop John B, Roger has brought in a CD of this. This is literally have never been heard anywhere
it's
outside
hot off
of
the
Kirkwood,
press.
Right?
Hot off the press. It was just printed up an hour ago. I just burned it to a CD.
Now, and, before we play this, I just want to talk a little bit about the technology of rock and roll, which has changed just a little bit in the 40 or so years that you've been recording.
It did, quite a bit.
How did you do this? Is it true that you did it on a laptop
computer? Yeah, I did it on a laptop computer, and I used a program called Adobe Audition, which used to be called Cool Edit Pro, and a lot of radio stations use it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good multi-track recording program.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hooked up a microphone. Actually, we used the built-in mic on the laptop to record this.
Wait a minute. You used the little microphone that's already there on the laptop?
Uh-huh, the one that's on the front of the laptop right over the little hole that's by the screen.
Uh-huh.
We just sang around the laptop. And then I went into the program and took all the noise out of it. And it's, well, take a listen.
All right, here it is.
We come on the Sloop John B. My grandfather and me, around Nassau town we roam, drinking all night, got into a fight. When I feel so break up, I wanna go home. So hoist up the John B. sail. See how the mainsail sets. Call for the captain ashore. Let me go home. Let me go home. I wanna go home. When I feel so break up, I wanna go home.
That sounds very sweet, Roger. I mean, recorded on a laptop computer. Sloop John B., which many of us know as a Beach Boys song, they turned into a hit.
Right. It was actually done by the Weavers first, and then the Kingston Trio did it, and then the Beach Boys. And I learned it back in around 1957 in Chicago at the Old Town School of Folk Music. It's originally from the Bahamas, from Nassau.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow, that very, did you have to teach Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson?
No, they knew it. They knew it. Yeah.
They knew all the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks to the Beach Boys, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Beach Boys and other bands of the 60s, you, of course, leader of the Byrds for all those years. How did the Byrds become the Byrds, and how did you and David Crosby first meet?
Actually, I first met David back around 1960 in L.A. at the Ash Grove. I was performing with the Limelighters as a guitar or banjo player,
mm-hmm.
and also doing my own solo set, opening up for the Limelighters. And then I'd get on stage with them and play backup because Glenn Yarbrough didn't want to play guitar anymore, so I had to kind of cover for him. And Crosby had just been in a play. I think it was an Edward Albee play. Was it Endgame? Was that Albee?
Sounds right.
Okay. And I think he was in a garbage can in this play, and he'd pop up like Sesame Street. Right, yeah. Right. So I met him. He was an actor. He didn't play guitar. He played a little guitar. I tried to show him a couple of tips on the guitar, mm-hmm. a few new chords and some picking patterns and things. And we got to be friends, and we went up to Santa Barbara and hung out. He took me to Santa Barbara in his convertible, and we both got a sunburn. And we stayed at his mom's house for a while, and she made us lemon avocado sandwiches. And it was real nice
California.
Time. Real nice time, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then I left. I went up to San Francisco, and I got the call from the Chad Mitchell Trio to go work with them, and I moved to New York, and I didn't see David for a few years. Next time I saw him, I was back in L.A. working at the Troubadour as an opening act for Roger Miller and Hoyt Axton.
Wow.
And it was a three-act bill, and mm-hmm. I was the opener.
Mm-hmm.
And David popped into the Troubadour, and this is after I'd met Gene Clark, and Gene and I had written a couple of songs together. And David came in and spontaneously started singing a harmony with one of the songs we'd written. And he said, "Let me be in your band." And we didn't really have a band. We were just making up songs. But he said, I know this guy's got a recording studio we could use free if you let me be in your band. I said, "Well, you're in the band, man." So we went over and we started recording every night at World Pacific Studios. And that's where actually the album called Preflight came out of. But it was just rehearsal tapes.
And I understand that the drummer, Michael Clark, got the job just because he looked like a drummer but didn't actually know how to play the drums. Is that true?
He looked like two of the Rolling Stones. He looked like Brian Jones and Mick Jagger combined.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave him the job based on that. He'd never played the drums before. But he learned how later.
Was it because it was that easy to learn how to play drums?
No, actually, we'd known it. We'd seen him before up in San Francisco. He played congas, so we knew he could keep a beat.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he'd never played the sit-down, the traps, and he learned pretty fast.
Pretty fast. Now, as I was introducing you, I said the man generally agreed upon is one of those who was first to fuse folk music with rock music, and I know there are those Bob Dylan purists who would argue and say, oh, no, when Dylan went electric, he's the one who did that. But you actually did it first, am I right?
Right. He didn't go electric till after Mr. Tambourine Man was a hit.
Mm-hmm.
It was number one in June of 65, and that's before the what was it? The Newport Folk Festival.
Festival. Yeah,
right. So, yeah. No, we were doing it before. Actually, Columbia Records dug up some old archival stuff on Dylan where he tried to go electric, I think around 63, and it didn't go over, so he just forgot about it.
But what made you decide to take this sound and say, okay, let's make it electric?
The Beatles. I was working for Bobby Darin by that time. I'd been working as a sideman singer, backup singer for Bobby Darin, playing 12-string guitar. Doing a folk segment in his show. And then he moved to New York and started pursuing his publishing business. He had a publishing company in the Brill Building, and he hired me as a songwriter. And my job was to listen to the radio and write songs like the ones that were out there. And the Beatles came out, and I just went, wow, I love this. And they were doing all these wonderful passing chords, you know, like folk music. Like normally in rock and roll, it would be like that. But the Beatles were going... all these passing chords. So I started getting into the Beatles and mixing up the Beatles and folk music on my own,
mm-hmm.
going down to Greenwich Village and playing a mixture of Beatles and folk music for the folk music purists in Greenwich Village.
And they didn't scream?
No, they didn't. They didn't like it.
They didn't like it?
No, they did not like it. But the guy who ran the folk music coffee house loved it. He put a sign outside that said Beatle imitations. And that's when I got the idea that it was time to go out to L.A.
Because in those days, anything Beatle was big.
Right, it was.
Yeah. Let me take a break. We'll come back, and then I'll ask Roger to play one of his classic Bird songs for us live here on News Talk 1120 KMOX. And there's lots more to do as the Paul Harris Show rolls along. That would be the unmistakable sound of one of the great classic rock bands inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1991. That'll be the Birds, and here's the man who was the leader of that band for so many years, Roger McGuinn, here in the studio with me with his Rickenbacker on his lap, and I got to ask you to play for me the all-time classic Bird song, the one you were just talking about before the break there, the one that kind of merged folk and rock forever, Mr. Tambourine Man.
Sure. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there ain't no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Take me for a trip upon your magic swirling ship. All my senses have been stripped, and my hands can't feel to grip, and my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere. I'm ready for to fade on to my own parade. Cast your dancing spell my way. I promise to go under it. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there ain't no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
So beautiful, so beautiful. Wow. Now, you got that from Mr. Dylan, but he had not recorded it yet, correct?
Right. Well, actually, he had recorded it, but he couldn't release it because somebody was singing out a tune on it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
But I understand that when you and the Birds went to record it, the record company wouldn't let any of the band members except you play on it. Is that true?
It was the record company and our management, actually. I was the only one who had any studio training. I'd been a session musician for 5 years by that time,
mm-hmm.
and the other guys were kind of green. So they didn't want to take any chances. I hired the band that did all the Beach Boys tracks called The Wrecking Crew.
Mm-hmm.
It was Hal Blaine and Leon Russell and Jerry Cole and Larry Nechtel.
And you were the only one who played guitar. What did the other guys do while you were playing?
They weren't even in the studio. They didn't come.
So the hit version of Mr. Tambourine Man that we know is not really the Birds. It's Roger McGuinn.
Yeah, well, it's...
And a bunch of other guys.
The backing track. But they sang on it. They did the vocals on the choruses.
Oh, they did.
I did the lead, you know, the...
it was you. It was you with them.
Yeah.
What was your relationship like with Bob Dylan? How did you guys meet, and how did that manifest itself through the years?
I met Bob. I didn't really know him. I sort of bumped into him in the village and didn't really talk to him or anything. He was just one of the kids around doing Woody Guthrie imitations.
Mm-hmm.
Then he later became Bob Dylan and started writing a lot of great material.
Mm-hmm.
We met him after Mr. Tambourine Man became successful, and he came to Ciro's and sat in with us. He got up on stage and sang with us, and... we hung out a little bit together. He would come over to my house and bring Allen Ginsberg and his finger cymbals and Allen in a little concertina. And they'd sit on the floor and we'd talk. And it was a friendly time.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd take me under his wing and tell me, you know, tips on the business and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you share songwriting secrets or did...
Not really, no. He was pretty well self-contained about songwriting and didn't... He did teach me some things about... He told me... You know, to write good songs that didn't just rhyme, but that really meant something. And
mm-hmm.
so he was giving me some good advice.
And through the years, you and the Birds recorded many of his songs. And
it was the best stuff around.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best, the meatiest material available,
mm-hmm.
I thought.
Was he a good guitar player? You're a very good guitar player. Was he a good guitar player or a better songwriter?
He was primarily a songwriter, but he could finger pick and do some pretty intricate things on the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, he started playing lead.
Yeah.
Have you heard him?
I have. Yeah. Well, I've seen video of him playing.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, he's wailing.
Yeah, he's getting into it.
Yeah. Now, we're talking about writing songs. He wrote many of the songs that you guys turned into hits, and you, of course, have written some. And then there are other guys who have been influenced by you through the years. Tom Petty has often been called Roger McGuinn Jr., almost as if he stole your sound and turned it into his own.
Well, he's got his own sound. I think he probably was inspired by the Byrds originally. In fact, he told me that. He told me a story about how when he was in Mudcrutch, a group he was in back in Florida, he wasn't the lead singer. That some other guy did all the leads, but he would do an occasional bird song, and the guy who owned the club said, you know, that blonde guy who sings those bird songs, you ought to get him to do more stuff because the audience likes him better.
Uh-huh. Have you gotten to know him, and did you ever record with him?
Yeah, I did. We did my Back from Rio CD with he sang on the single we wrote together, King mm-hmm. of the Hill. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we know each other real well. We've gone on tour together and had a lot of fun.
You never put your arm around him and said, glad I could give you a career, kid.
No, I wouldn't be, you know, I don't feel that way about it. I just look at him as a friend, and, you know, I'm glad he was able to pick up some tips from what I was doing, and I certainly picked up tips from people along the way.
Roger's new CD is called Roger McGuinn Limited Edition, and it is available on his website, rogermcguinn.com. He will also be performing at the Pageant here in St. Louis tomorrow night, along with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, who will join me next hour. Last time he was in town was, I think, about 3 years ago when he played at the beautiful Sheldon here.
Oh, yeah.
And now they'll be at the Pageant tomorrow night. Let me take a break, and we'll come back with more with classic rock legend Roger McGuinn on the Paul Harris Show here on KMOX.
Someone. If I had some more time to spend, then I guess I'd be with you, my friend. If I needed someone, had you come some other day, then it might not have been like this. But you see now I'm too much in love.
Of Roger McGuinn's brand new album called Roger McGuinn Limited Edition. It's the classic George Harrison Beatles tune, If I Needed Someone. And Roger is here with me in the studio today. He'll be performing here in St. Louis at the Pageant tomorrow night with the Rock Bottom Remainders. And if you want to find out all about the new CD, you can get it through Amazon.com or go to his website, RogerMcGuinn.com. And before I ask you to indulge me by doing another one of my favorite Byrds songs, tell me about your relationship with the Beatles. I know you were introduced by Derek Taylor, who was their publicist and your publicist, or press guy, in the 60s. And I had on the radio about 15 years ago. And holy cow, what a great storyteller he was.
Oh, he was so wonderful. He was such a great sense of humor.
Oh.
And what stories he had.
Yeah.
I mean, working with the Beatles and, boy. Anyway, yeah, he introduced us in 1965 in a little hotel room above the cellar. I think it was called the Blazes. It was like a little club in London, a blues club that mm-hmm. we played. And the Beatles were there to see us. And then we all got upstairs and exchanged notes. And I showed John Lennon my little glasses. He said, what's with the little glasses? You know, mm-hmm. and I said, well, I use them to see with. So he got into them after that. And George and I got to know each other. And
you had the rectangular ones, and he went with the oval ones,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he went with the round ones after that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd gotten the idea from John Sebastian, actually. I was in Greenwich Village walking down McDougal Street about 2:00 in the morning, and John Sebastian was walking north, and he had these little cobalt blue glasses on, and I said, wow, those are groovy. He said, yeah, man, try them on and look up at the street lights and move your head around. It's really, really groovy. So I did, and it was. And when I got out to LA, I got some little cobalt blue glasses and started wearing them as my main glasses, and mm-hmm. then I showed them to John Lennon, and he got into them.
Yep.
But the song, If I Needed Someone, was actually written. George wrote that based on a riff that I did back in the Byrds on the Bells of Rimini. It was like, oh, what will you give me? Say the sad bells of Rimini. So he wrote the song, and he gave a copy of it to Derek, and Derek brought it back to the States and came over to my house and said, George wants you to know that he wrote this whole song based on the riff that you did. So it was like a cross-pollination. We were like Beatles had influenced us, and we were sending something back to them.
That must have just made your
heart
go gigantic.
Are you
at that
kidding?
Point.
Oh yeah, are you kidding? It's a wonderful feeling. To
very, very, very cool. And you, did you stay in touch with George all the way through?
Yes,
the end?
Actually, we did. I saw George. I'd see him over at Tom Petty's place a lot. We'd go over there and hang out, and mm-hmm. George would be there.
George was in the Traveling Wilburys with Tom.
It was even before the Wilburys.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They'd been friends for a long time, mm-hmm. and. Yeah, it was great. Great time.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. We were talking during the commercial break here about royalties and all that sort of stuff, and you were telling me that it's so much easier to take your own music and make it available to people now in this digital age
yes.
than it was when you were first starting out and you had to deal with a record company that wouldn't even allow the whole band to record with you and that sort of thing.
Right.
How do you make that happen, and how do you turn it into money now? Is that possible to work outside the mainstream?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've made more on this than I have in, like, my last four albums combined.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I never got any royalties for Back from Rio, which sold about 500,000 copies. But this one's been in the black for, like, months now. I mean, it's in a major profit. I mean, I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just selling venues and over the internet at McGuinn.com and Amazon.com. And it's so much fun.
And you've gotten it on iTunes also, right?
It's on iTunes and eMusic. It's in The Orchard. It's on Rolling Stone. You can download it from them or...
What a long way from recording songs and kids would walk around with transistor radios plugged into their ears. And now they're walking around with
iPods
plugged into their ears.
Right. Well, it's the same idea. It's just a different device.
And your music is there, yeah.
Yeah. I'm also podcasting on the Folk Den.
Now, what does that mean, podcasting?
Anybody who has an iPod can download directly to their iPod from the Folk Den now.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I have one, and I'll have to check that out.
Okay.
How was the music industry in the 60s in terms of paying you?
Not good. Not good. But we were all just so eager to get a record deal and to be famous or whatever, you know, to get the girls, that we'd sign anything. And mm-hmm. so some of the royalty rates are, like, for an album you get 0.0007 cents for the whole album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you'd have to sell an awful lot of albums to make any money on that.
Now it's very different. You've got the girl, Camilla, who's
right
here with
got
us.
Got the girl and getting the money, too.
And she's co-writing the songs and she's getting money
That's
for
right.
them, too.
Sometimes she gets more than I do because she's ASCAP and I'm BMI.
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to ask you to do a song for me that you were kind enough to do last time I had you on. And I told you it is my all-time favorite Bird song. This was never really a top 40 hit.
It was in England, actually.
But here in the States, was really more of a hit on album rock radio.
Right, album rock. Yeah.
And it is one of my favorites. Roger McGuinn here on KMOX doing Chestnut Mare.
Always alone, never with a herd. Prettiest mare I've ever seen, you have to take my word. I'm gonna catch that horse if I can, and when I do, I'll give her my brand. Well, I was up on Stony Ridge after this chestnut mare. I've been chasing her for weeks now. I'd catch a little glimpse of her every once in a while. She'd be off taking her meal or bathing. She was a real fine lady. One day I saw her standing over there in a clearing, so I snuck up to her nice and easy. I waited for the wind to blow just the right way and got my rope out, flung it in the air. I'm gonna catch that horse if I can, and when I do, I'll give her my brand. And we'll be friends for life. She'll be just like a wife.
Sorry.
I'm gonna catch that horse if I can. Well, I got her, and I'm pulling on her. She's pulling back like a mule trying to climb up a ladder. I take this chance and I jump up on her. I land right on top of her. She takes off, running up onto that ridge, higher than I've ever been before. We're running along fine, and then she sees this sidewinder all coiled up and ready to strike. She doesn't know what to do, so she spooks, jumps off the edge, me holding on. Above the clouds, high higher than eagles were gliding, suspended in the sky. Over the moon, straight for the sun we were riding. My eyes were filled with light. Behind us black walls, below us a bottomless canyon, floating with no sound. Gulls far below seem to be suddenly rising, exploding all around. I'm gonna catch that horse if I can, and when I do I'll give her my breath, and we'll be friends for life. She'll be just like the one. I'm gonna catch that horse if I can. And we're falling down this crevice, about a mile down there, I'd say. I look down and I see this red thing below us. Turns out to be our reflection in a little pool of water, about 6 feet wide and only 1 foot deep. We're coming down at it. Finally, we hit and we splashed that pool dry. And that's when I lost my hold and she got away. But I'm never going to give up till the day I die. So I'm going to get her again someday. I'm going to catch that horse if I can. And when I do, I'll give her my brand. And we'll be friends for life. She'll be just like a wife. I'm gonna catch that horse. I'm gonna catch that horse. I'm gonna catch that horse if I can. I'm gonna catch that horse if I can.
Roger McGuinn, live in the Paul Harris Studios here at KMOX, doing Chestnut Mare. Was there ever an actual Chestnut Mare? Did you ever catch it? Did you have a horse like that?
No, it was written for a Broadway play. Jacques Levy and I wrote a play based on Peer Gynt called Gene Tripp.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, the guy goes around the country doing different jobs. He's a politician. Let me show you a little of this. I'm Roger McGuinn, and I approve this message. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. I want to grow up to be a politician and be the old U.S. of A's number one man. I'll always be tough, but I'll never be scary. I want to shoot guns or butter my bread. I'll work on the towns or conservate the prairie. And you can believe the future's ahead. I'll give the young the right to vote as soon as they mature, but spare the rod and spoil the child to help them feel secure. I'll open my door and charge you no admission, and you can be sure I'll give you my hand. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And if I win election day, I might give you a job. I'll sign the bill to help the poor, to show I'm not a snob. I'll open my door, charge you no admission, and you can be sure I'll give you my hand. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. Take over this beautiful land.
Roger McGuinn, live in the Paul Harris Studios here at KMOX. We'll be right back. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having Roger McGuinn live in the studio here today. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure, Paul.
Make sure we get the plugs in here for the Rock Bottom Remainers. Roger is performing with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson and a bunch of others. Dave and Ridley, by the way, will be here in the next hour, so they're getting plenty of plugs here today on KMOX. But Roger also has the website, rogermcguinn.com, where you can get this new limited edition CD that he's been nice enough to bring in here today and find out about other projects that he's got, including the Folk Den, which is really wonderful stuff.
Thank you.
And when will that Sloop John B. be on there?
Well, I usually post it the first of the month. I might post it a little sooner this month.
Get it up on there later today or something.
Yeah, I could do that.
Now that we've played it here on KMOX. Right. Roger McGuinn, an absolute pleasure. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer here on the Paul Harris Show on KMOX.